Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship-ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Well, hello and welcome. I am Morgana. I am with my husband of 25 times, Devin.
Yes, of 25 times.
Yeah, and before we talk about healthy, calming, effective communication, I just want to say that today is the anniversary of our Texas wedding, and you haven't said a word about it.
Okay, well... So here's what I agreed to, right? This is part of the tip for people at home. I totally agreed to getting married around the world. What I did not agree to was remembering all the anniversaries. Because that's something I could have told you far, far in advance would have been an epic fail for me. However, I think we had the officiant of that wedding, Alex, on our show, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago.
I think 5 weeks ago.
See, that's why I don't remember anniversaries, and I will let you do that, because you will know that it's 5 weeks ago, and I will have zero information on that subject.
I'm
but not... happy anniversary, my love.
Oh, finally. Thank you.
Oh, was that what you were looking for?
Mwah. Yeah, I only know because it came up in my Facebook feed, and then I checked my calendar to verify.
So that's terrible. How dare
you? I wish you a happy anniversary on Facebook.
Yes, well, I'm good. Okay. So we're going to keep getting married, and we haven't gotten married in quite a while. That's
in
for
a
sure.
Year. It's almost.
It's been almost a year.
But, I think next week will be a year.
Well, the good news is, I think things are slowly, coming back to normal. And
I would disagree on that. We're heading into the third wave and winter.
Well, I'm going to stick with the cold, crazy, sexy midlife love rather than additional waves of sadness.
The nice thing is, and I was talking with a client about that this morning, is that the pressure cooker of a pandemic and all sorts of political craziness that I never could have imagined. I was a coach for the entertainment industry for 10 years, and nobody would have greenlit anything that's been going on in 2020. But with all that, it really kind of magnifies whatever is going on, strengths and weaknesses. So some couples are getting closer and some couples are having challenges. And when you have pressure, it kind of reveals the fissures of what needs attention. And it can show up in people being more reactive and more irritable and more insecure and more sensitive and more aggressive. And all you can do is pay attention and look at, well, what skills do I need to bring to the situation to have a happier, better life? And that's why I thought today we would talk about communication. And it just so happens that my husband is a Jedi ninja communication master, far, far better than I am, especially in terms of maintaining relationships with despite fundamental disagreements. So since Devin has actually been tapped to talk about relationship and communication skills, and we're talking about love and marriage, but we're also talking about skills you can use with family and friends and business associates and, you know, wherever people come together and talk and have ideas and disagree. And whenever you want something, Devin's like magic skill is teaching people, especially women, but I'm sure it crosses both ways, how to ask for what you want in a way that you can actually get it, so that you don't come off as the nag, that you actually get your needs met. So I'm talking a lot now, but I'm really going to hand this over to Devin to really talk today about how to communicate more effectively, how to ask for what you want in a way that you can actually get it and get your needs met. And of course, you can just listen in and take notes and be engaged. And if you've got some kind of sticky situation, you can call in and get some direct attention here this hour at 888-627-6008. So Devin, can you guide us through how to communicate better to get what we want and stay alive?
Okay, so that's the trick. So we did discuss to get what you want part. Now that said, we want to kind of at least first kind of start defining, well, what is it that you want? Because I want it to rain buckets of cash and I want everything to go my way and I want everything to be wonderful and hunky-dory and I never want to have a feeling about anything unless it's a bunch of happiness celebrating all of the buckets of cash that rain down from the sky. So, I mean, but I know that, you know, I'm kind of saying it tongue in cheek, but I think it's really important to kind of start, you know, start with this place of what is it that you want, right? And so some of the smaller things or some of the big long-term goals are about buckets of cash. But I think when we start getting, so I was answering it from sort of a different perspective, but I'm going to run with your perspective for the moment. If you know what it is that you want, and maybe it's bucket of cash, and maybe it's riches and
from your partner.
Well, right. Right. So, but the from your partner thing is, well, what does that mean? It could mean a whole variety of vast ocean of kinds of things, right? And I would say most people who are asking that question, I want this thing from my partner, it's probably their attention.
I would say so too.
Right? But that doesn't mean, like, in other words, I think frequently we do this thing that we talk about, or at least the way I discuss it with this a friend of mine, Danny. We used to have these incredible conversations about relationships. In the outside chance you're listening, Danny, I miss you, man. So one of the things that we would do is we would talk about the thing. And the thing was, you know, Susie left the lights on, right? Larry did something and I want him to fix the thing. But that's usually not really the thing. It's just the catalyst for the thing. It's the thing that really what it is, I need to be heard. I need to have attention paid to my my difficulty, my discomfort, whatever's kind of going on. And so that's the thing behind the thing. Because most people that I end up speaking to don't start off with, I need my partner to hear what it is that I'm saying. Because the partner may not be able to fix your happiness. Matter of fact, in all likelihood, they won't be able to fix it. They may be able to support you through the difficulty, but they may not be able to wave a magic wand and make you go from feeling sad, blue, disconnected, to joy, free, and all those other kinds of things.
Well, here's one that comes up a lot is women want more help around the house. They feel like they've got their job to make money, but they're also taking care of kids and they're also cleaning the house and they're just exhausted and they want more help.
Right.
And they ask for it and it gets tuned out or something doesn't change.
Right. And so there's good news and bad news to them. As we have discussed, I usually preface good news and bad news with me, meaning the bad, there's good news and bad news. The good news is I'm buying another guitar. The bad news is that there'll be another guitar. So that all said, I think, you know, when you start talking about, you know, house chores and some surreal mundane kinds of things. That doesn't mean it's not important.
Mundane is really important.
It's really important, especially if you're living together, especially if you're in a longer term relationship where those kinds of, shall we say, the mundane things all of a sudden start getting underneath somebody's skin.
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason why you date. That's part of the reason why you go to somebody's house while you're dating to see if their mess matches your mess. But
everybody's on good behavior when they're dating.
And if
they aren't, you run.
Right.
Because it's not going to get better.
That's true. But you have to decide, is that really the deal breaker? Is house chores the deal breaker?
It may not have been in the beginning, but maybe 10 years later when there are kids and it's just too much. I think things change and things become more important over time.
I would agree with that, but I would also suggest that if somebody is focusing on, let's say, dishes, there's probably because somebody is not really getting to the thing behind the thing. The dishes are the thing, but the thing behind the thing is love, caring, support, respect. And so all of a sudden the dishes become a symbol of all the other things that relationship isn't getting. That person isn't feeling heard, loved, appreciated, receiving the respect, all those kinds of things that they want, right?
I would agree with that.
Right. Yeah. And so I would say it's less about the dishes. It's less about sort of those other things and more about, I would say that you kind of want to start focusing on quality time. And then the dishes become sort of a less of a thing. That said, I think you have to kind of acknowledge I'm seeing the dishes, and I'm just using the dishes as sort of some sort of a random conversation, right? As the random thing. And let's say somebody's, well, I work all day, I come home, the dishes or the place is a little bit of a mess or something like that. And then what ends up happening is that person who is annoyed by that starts making that a much larger thing. In other words, it starts becoming the emblem.
Well, it becomes the symbol of unmet needs.
Right. Absolutely. So if you don't do the dishes, then you're just a dud.
Then you don't love me.
Right. Then you don't love me, which is a very slippery slope for most people. Because what ends up happening is, especially in a long-term relationship, is that a little thing happens. And in the grand scheme of things, most things that happen are little. And I'm talking about sort of like routines. We had a fight about, I don't know, the cats. We had a fight about, well, did you pay the car insurance? Well, I always pay the car insurance. It's, you know, those kinds of things. And then it becomes, well, you didn't pay this bill in the manner in which I expected you to pay the bill. And then little by little, it becomes, well, you never pay the bills. And then it becomes, you must not love or care for me by the way in which you pay the bills. So how do we start fixing those kinds of things? I think probably the first starting point is honoring the fact that the bills are really just a component of this other stuff. And by the way, I'm not talking about you let this other person pay the bills and they haven't paid it for 6 months and now you're sitting in darkness and you've run out of candles, right? We're not talking about those kinds of things, but I think we are talking about, so what do you do? I mean, I think the first thing is to recognize that you may have, again, this is just based on my experience, that people sort of conflate one thing with another thing and they may not actually jive, because it's easier to complain about the dishes because we can say, look, there are the dishes, they're piled up in the sink, and isn't that a terrible thing? And this is your fault.
Well, I also think that women tend to make connections and maybe globalize things more than men do, where for you, it's just a dish, but for a woman, it is, he doesn't care, he doesn't listen, I'm so tired, and he doesn't care that I'm so tired, he knows that I want him to do it, and he's not doing it anyway, therefore he doesn't love me, is a very female progression of thoughts.
And I think it's a reasonable one, and there's a long Kabbalistic answer for exactly why that is.
Okay.
So I would say that in general, women are much more a community focused. They're more likely to join clubs and not know anybody. Again, I'm not talking about every single woman on the planet. We're talking about it. If we were to put things down sort of like on a spectrum, you'd find that women are much more going to be aesthetically aware of things, where a guy could probably live with a mess and his brain can be in 15 other different places at once and not even see the dishes in the sink.
Which, by the way, is why I'm able to find things that you've lost so easily, because you do have these blind spots.
Right. No, I totally have certain kinds of blind spots.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be
like that
much
red
more
journal that you spent 2 weeks looking for.
Oh, that was horrifying. That was horrifying. I had kept this journal for like a year and a half of all of these notes that were just really important to me. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, this is the day that I need to go through this, all these notes for writing and things. And I couldn't find them and looked everywhere in the garage, tore it to pieces, every box, all this craziness, and made myself nuts in the process. And then finally I'm standing in this room saying, I can't find this. And Morgana goes, you mean this one? And literally just pulled it off of a pile. And said, you mean this one? And I was also, I felt this wave, this avalanche of wave of humiliation. Crush over me.
Sorry.
But that was my humiliation. I was actually incredibly grateful that you found it. So let's go back for a second. So I think if we are making some sort of like, you know, wider spectrum kinds of generalizations, which I'm not a fan of doing, but it does, it covers a lot of cross sections of people. Women are much more likely to fit easily into communities. Men are much more likely to be loners. Women are much more likely to be aesthetically aware of all the pieces. And they've done tons of studies on this stuff. They're going to know where, oh, there's a little cup there and there's a little thing over there. And they'll know what's in the room. And men are oblivious. So if there is a dish piled up in the sink or dishes piled up in the sink, a woman is just more attuned to seeing it. Remember, they did a study on the cells in men and women's eyes because they're different. And so women are much going to be much more attuned to color, where men are going to be much more attuned to things like velocity.
Motion. That
motion
you're better
and speed,
at catching
exactly.
balls.
Right.
And I'm better at choosing wall colors.
Right. But these are really important. These are really important pieces to the relationship. And what that frequently says.
And by the way, I'm a loner. You're more of a social butterfly.
Oh,
so there's
a
lot of
butterfly.
There's a lot of variety. As Devin said,
totally.
We're not saying you need to be one or the other and fit into some 50s mold of gender.
No, I think what this part of this conversation is going to be, take the things that make sense to you and apply them in your life and then go out and try them out and see how things work. Right? Especially if things aren't working. If doing it your way isn't working, then try a different thing. So part of this kind of this first notion that we're talking about, and I think it's a really important one, is that more often than not, our partner is going to see it a little bit different. And they're going to take what's important different from it. In other words, they may have noticed the dish in the sink. And again, I'm using this as just some moronic, general kind of things that we complain about, right? The house isn't clean or some sort of whatever. Somebody didn't pay a bill, right? So there's dishes in the sink. And so one person of the two is more likely to be much more attuned to noticing the dishes in the sink. Whereas the other partner is just going to be less inclined to see it. That doesn't mean, so what ends up happening is, the person who sees the dishes over and over and over again starts developing a narrative around what that means, right? And so let's say the person who's annoyed by the dishes in the sink goes to their spouse and says, well, but okay, so there's dishes and you promised to do them and you didn't do them.
J'accuse.
Right. And so that person says, okay, I'll do it in 10 minutes. And then they get busy or they get tied up or whatever. But really what they're telling you is that sort of thing probably is not going to be sort of organically on their radar. And so what does that mean? How do you get through this? Because if someone comes to me and says, you know, the dishes aren't done, it's not that for me the dishes aren't done. And I actually tend to do my fair share of dishes. I would say probably more than my fair share of dishes.
Well, I like to use the dishwashing elves in the dishwasher, and you don't.
Right, because I just assume having the dish clean when I want to eat off it rather than when the elves get around to doing it. So that's me. I actually want to eat off of a clean dish and have clean utensils.
Well, aren't you fastidious?
No, I'm fussy. That's what I am. I'm a fussy guy.
Okay.
So I want the clean dish. So the thing is, I can want the dish, and I can either do one of two things. I can either say, well, I'm not going to do it in some way to punish the person, like hoping that the other person will notice the dish and that they'll do it themselves.
And they won't.
And they won't do it because their head is just going to be in a different place and time of what's important, like in the grand scheme. In other words, there's going to be a logic that says, well, how can I do the dishes? We're in the middle of a pandemic, or we're in the middle of an election cycle, or we're in the middle of social upheaval. When all of these other grander things are going on, how
the
can
the kitten escaped?
The kitten escaped, yeah. Right? Which I got back in 2 seconds, separate story.
Yeah.
So the point is, it's not necessarily about the dishes. So my number one thing is that we have to start honoring the fact that some of these little things that we have sort of like built a narrative around as being about love rather than a dish is actually pretty detrimental to the relationship. Because what people end up doing is, let's say we get into an argument, or let's say imaginary person X and imaginary person Y are married and they love each other. And then imaginary person Y feels slighted in some way. And instead of saying, I feel, you know, actually that hurt my feelings and I feel slighted from this, they may say to themselves, well, it's really not that big of a deal. Am I really going to argue about the dish?
I think that can get really dangerous.
Well, that's exactly my point. Because what ends up happening is that person takes a tiny step back from the relationship. They don't run. They're not filing divorce papers. They're not doing any of that. But there's this perceived slight. And they take a little tiny step back away from the relationship. And then the person who did the slighting, in all likelihood, by accident, is that the cat's trying to escape?
I think somebody's hammering next door.
Yeah, it's probably okay. That.
Go on.
So then the other person takes a tiny step back away from the relationship because they perceive there's something wrong that the other person isn't telling them. It's a tiny thing, right? It's kind of like a couple grains of sand in your shoe. So each person takes a tiny, tiny, almost imperceptible step away from the relationship, as opposed to saying, hey, did you mean to hurt my feelings? What ends up happening is somebody supposes, oh, you must have done that. Otherwise, I can't really justify this feeling that I'm having.
Well, and women as girls, we tend to be taught to avoid confrontation. So what happens is the fear of confrontation keeps us from speaking up, and we minimize our experience until it becomes so overwhelming that like the rage monster wakes up and is so angry that it like overpowers the fear, and everything we've been upset about for the last 20 years shows up at that moment because the scrambled eggs are rubbery.
Right.
And so we want to learn to speak up much sooner before it builds up to that point, to have like the safety in the relationship. But part of that is the fear that if I speak up, it won't matter, that it won't change anything. So why bother?
Well, and that's okay. So here's my response to that. And I think that's absolutely true. And I think women have been taught certain kind of things that don't necessarily work, as men have been taught certain ideas of living that don't necessarily work either. So I think what ends up happening is that exactly. In other words, all of a sudden it becomes about dishes and they're never done and somebody's angry and then they blow up about the dishes, right? So if somebody starts accusing another person about much of anything, at some point that person who's sort of taking the heat, and they may not understand the magnitude of the heat or where exactly it's coming from, because are we really talking about dishes? Is that really the subject matter? And so they're confused. And they may act in defense, or they may act like, what are you even talking about? And then it becomes a much bigger thing, right? It becomes, well, how could you not understand these dishes? So what do you do? Well, I think what you mentioned a moment ago is incredibly important. And that thing is that you have to kind of honor the feeling about that thing beforehand. And the way you approach it to, I think, to any other person isn't necessarily, you did this terrible thing, you're the worst person and a jerk face in the world. It really should become, my feelings are hurt, can you help me? Because I think when you start talking about how we interrelate, and this is, I think this is particularly true as a man, I think when you're talking about ideas that we learn when we're really young, part of the things that I think most men learn when they're really young is a certain kind of measure of chivalry. And we want to help, right? In other words, when you're like, hey, can you move that couch? Yes, men will run from all directions in order to help a woman move a couch, right? We want to be your helpers. And that's part of the reason, part of the things that we're trained to do when we're young is to be problem solvers. Right. So if I'm with guys and a guy says, I have a problem, I'm spitting out the answer immediately. Like, you're having this problem. Great. Well, I know the answer. Let's do this is the answer. And that works well in general between two men.
And by the way, there are a lot of us women who are like that, too. Yeah, that's I call us women who are the problem solvers and the brainiacs, like the Athena archetypes, especially, and I don't know that it's exclusive to daddy's girl, but I was a bit of a daddy's girl. So that was kind of drilled into me.
So a survey of one.
There you go. 100% of Morgana's.
Right. of Morgana's in this room.
Yes. Touché, my love.
So we know it's absolute. And I think it's, again, this all goes back to, listen, we're all different. Not all men are the same. Not all women are the same. Yes, there's going to be women who are problem solvers. But
I'm not a couch mover.
Right. You're not a couch mover.
Yeah.
You're not a couch mover. I'm a couch mover, and I've become less so as I have become crazy sexy in my 50s. So what does that mean? I think what that means is that we stop making sort of the discomfort we're experiencing about the dishes.
Could you repeat that magic formula phrase?
What magic?
My feelings are hurt. Can you help me?
Oh, yeah. I think you just said it. My feelings are hurt. Can you help me?
So what you're doing is
you are appealing to the other person's sense of love and duty, right? Because that's what part of what a marriage is. I mean, there's a certain measure of duty and obligation and love.
Or any relationship that has, even if it's not marriage, any relationship that has that bond of love, friendship, family, I think that it just brings out our natural compassion.
Well, okay, so I'm going to disagree only from the standpoint of sometimes our families are too close.
Okay.
In other words, let's say you have a cousin who made fun of you for 25 years, and now you're grown-up people, and your cousin's still making fun of you, and now all of a sudden one day you wake up and you're like, I hate that cousin. And if you go to the cousin and say, hey, I need your help, it's quite possible they will hear you and say, oh my gosh, I'm really sorry. I didn't realize I was hurting your feelings all this time. And it's also quite possible, depending on the nature of the relationship, that cousin may or may not.
F you, man. Get over it.
Right. Get over it, man. Yeah, grow a pair. It may be that. And because I think there's a certain family dynamic where we kind of almost expect to make fun of each other. Now, having all that said, that doesn't mean, I'm suggesting for a second, that somebody shouldn't call that out. Matter of fact, I think they absolutely should. It's just what kind of result can you expect to have? I would say that if you were talking to the bullyish cousin and now you are middle-aged people, I think you are less likely to kind of get the intended result if you were sort of dealing with, let's say, a spouse or somebody who absolutely loves, like, you know that they care for you deep down, but they're doing this behavior.
Well, who's in a relationship by choice. That's
right.
That's
absolutely.
A little bit different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a totally different kettle of fish. So I come from a very large family and I expect them to be, you know, offering a little bit of shit talking. Can I say that word?
I just did.
I hope the FCC doesn't come crashing down on our faces or anything.
Okay.
So I think you start from that place of it's not about how do we conflate ideas so that they become really big deals to overcome. And B, we start framing it in a way that you're appealing to the person's willingness to actually be helpful within the relationship. So what we're doing is we may be making the feelings smaller about the problem, and hopefully it becomes much more bite-sized and manageable for the person who may want to apologize or take a look at this thing.
Well, what I like about the question, can you help me, is then it's not me telling you what to do. Let's say I'm coming to you that way. When you come up with a solution, you own it. So if you're helping me, you are generating the solution. And I think that that's a very different experience for both of us.
Right. So anyway, that's one side of the coin. The one side of the coin is, hey, you've stepped on my toes. Instead of saying you stomped on my toes and you did it on purpose and you're a terrible person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's the wrong way. That would be where the red circle with the line slashed through it
uh-huh.
comes into play. And we start with more of a, hey, you know, my feelings have been hurt. You don't even say you hurt my feelings, because that's, again, still akin to getting to the gray area. And then move into the can you help me? And then we can discuss the specifics of the problem. So what do you do if you're being accused of this thing? Right? Because there's a response to it. Right? At some point, me, even me, it's hard to imagine, but a guy like me, such as I, has been accused of mistakes I have made.
That is inconceivable.
It's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? I could respond by saying, what are you talking about? Grow a pair. And how dare you, you know, Captain Jerkface.
I like that, Captain Jerkface.
Right, I think that's as polite as
that's strong language.
It's very strong language, especially since I probably got bleeped 3 minutes ago.
Okay.
So what do you do? So here's one of those moments, if somebody's asking you for your help, this is where you get to stop and listen.
Mm.
And the important part about the listening is that you don't interrupt. Is you let the thing, because sometimes when somebody's bearing their soul, because even if it's like, yeah, but aren't we still talking about dishes? No, we're talking about the thing behind the thing. And the thing behind the thing is the center. It's the vulnerable, mushy, upset, scared, as you just pointed out, many women are brought up to kind of avoid those kinds of confrontation. So if they are confronting this thing, they may have all of those feelings. And this, of course, can
and
be
And I would think men, too.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with that. Yeah, absolutely. So if you are needing to kind of like stand up for your feelings in some way, and now you, instead of doing it with anger, because anger is one of those emotions that shows up to stand up for your emotions when other ones aren't ready, like mm-hmm. when sadness and disappointment and other things show up. That's where it kind of gets uncomfortable and scary. And it's like, okay, I'll do anything but come to you with my real sort of vulnerability.
I love that. Let's pause on that for a second. Anger is the response that shows up when the other feelings are not ready to express themselves.
Right. Because
wow.
Anger is easy.
That's really profound.
We all get angry.
Yeah.
We all get angry, right? That's easy stuff. So if we're talking... So that means if somebody says something to you like, hey, can you help me with my feelings? That's when we get to kind of move into sort of like, okay, let me hear it out. And it's really important to let them completely finish, because there may be a point in the conversation where they may accuse you, like they're trying really hard. They're trying hard to kind of keep it into this help frame, but they couldn't help themselves. And they said, yes, but you left the dishes out, and you know, and it becomes the fist shaking at the heavens, how dare you, and all this other stuff. But they're trying, right? That's an opportunity to not. Here's another red circle with a line slash through it, where you don't say, well, listen, you always are melodramatic and you're always trying to get me and you're always trying to do that. That's where you can avoid that whole line of questioning and you can just hear the problem out. And here's the rub. Here's the magic thing, that whether you are the person trying to draw attention to the problem, or whether you are trying to be the helper and the fixer of the problem, the important thing, and this is, I would argue, perhaps the most important thing to sort of the conflict resolution, where nobody's stepping away, not only from the relationship, because anytime you step away from your primary love relationship, you're ostensibly stepping away from love, which is a whole other kettle of fish that you don't want to do. So if you get into that place where you are hearing or you are explaining, and probably the first few times you do this, it's going to be hard to do it right, just because our natural inclination is to say, is to point the finger and say, you're a jerky jerk face. How dare you?
But you knew I was a jerky jerk face when you married me. So
I knew
it's
you
your
were
fault.
A jerky jerk face in an hour. I knew that was
and
part
you,
of it.
And you chose this jerky
I
jerk
chose
face.
You, right, because I'm, of the two of us, the worst. The worst of the two. So what do you do if you're one or the other, right? And here's the big question, is you may feel with every fiber of your being, every nuance that you possess in your body, that you are right.
I am.
I know, but I'm talking to all of these people out there.
Okay.
So if you're out there and you're thinking to yourself, but I'm right, my complaint about the dishes was absolutely true, you will make it harder for the other person to find a way to make it right. And this is also true of the receiver. If the person who's probably uncomfortable coming to you with this vulnerable problem, because it isn't about the dishes, it's not, because I already knew you were a slob when they married you. If it's that person comes to you with this vulnerable thing, and halfway through, you're thinking to yourself, but I'm right. You knew this information. And that's when you shut up extra more extra, not talking about your being right, because there's a downside either way. Let's say you're in the mid of this thing and you're thinking, but I'm right. And I'm on the verge of saying I'm right. Now,
what if I'm thinking it so loudly?
Right. Well, that happens too. Even if the other person is thinking it loudly, this is an opportunity.
Is thinking loudly okay if it isn't verbalized?
No, because that's what's called being passive aggressive.
Oh, okay.
Nice try. So if somebody is doing, right, if somebody's bearing their soul and the receiver is like, I'm trying to help, but I'm right. You did this wrong thing, and so you get what you get. Now you're punished and grow a pair, right? If we get into that thing, we are losing the opportunity. Because that person is really coming to you saying, I have this problem and I'm not getting through it. And if, even if it's the dishes, even if it's this mundane that you told me you were going to park the car, now we got a $70 ticket, I hate you, right? Even if it's like, yeah, but I moved it already and then I forgot to move it back or whatever convoluted argument we come up with to kind of fix it. That's where we get to completely listen. And we get to, for the moment, suspend our understanding that we are right. It doesn't mean forever we get rid of it. But
can I also say that discovering that you are not 100% right is not such a bad thing?
No, I think it's, I honestly think, here's the thing.
Discovering that maybe you'd made a mistake, and I'm basing this on a recent fight Devin and I had. Mm-hmm. It's when you can actually see the other person's point of view and the validity of their point of view, there's actually a sweetness to it.
Well, it's actually, there's a word for it.
Yeah.
And that word is intimacy.
Mm.
And so if we stop being right, we have to realize that what will end up happening is we will grow trust in the other person's willingness to confide in you the things that they're frightened of. And when you do that, you allow that other person to experience intimacy with you. In other words, but keep in mind, you can decide that you're really right an hour later and take that intimacy and all of that good stuff and stomp on it. And that's those, obviously, for somebody who, and again, we can do this with our friends and all that other stuff, but frequently our sort of like our primary love interest is the person who holds our heart the most, which means they can do the most damage with it. It's a scary thing. How do relationships work at all? That's a tough one. It's a mystery. But we are drawn to each other, right? We're drawn to each other. And so how do we want to, if we're drawn to each other through some magical way, some thing of the system of dating and getting to know each other, and at the end of all that dating, we decide that I want to be your person, whether it's marriage or living together or permanent or cohabitation, whatever that thing is, that's the person you're picking above everybody else. Right? So it's special and it's unique and should be sacred. And the more sacred we treat it, the more likely we're going to get all the good stuff that comes from that. So what's the good stuff? The good stuff is the intimacy. The good stuff is I know that I can come to somebody and say, okay, I feel that life is terrible and frightening and scary. And certainly if there was a time where things like that existed, it would be like right now. So that means we can go to another person and feel vulnerable and then feel as though maybe this other person won't have the answer or the perfect answer, but I know that they're going to be on my team and I know that they're going to try, because sometimes we can't wave that magic wand. So being right is like, it's a crusher. It's a crusher, and it's ultimately about my ego. If I want to be right, I'm just attempting to prove that whatever it is that you're feeling is actually wrong. What you're feeling is wrong. And basically what I'm doing is I'm discounting the person with a grievance. I'm discounting their feelings. And I'm also, let's say I'm the person who's kind of bringing up the issue and I start attempting to be right with them, I'm doing the same thing. Because maybe the thing that prevented them doing the right thing for me is the same fear that they had. In other words, sometimes let's go back to the dishes. Maybe that person didn't do the dishes out of some feeling deep inside of their mind based upon their parents and experience from 50 years ago. And I've been holding on to this terrible idea. And I share this terrible idea with my partner. And then the partner says, yeah, but I'm right. So who cares about your 50-year ordeal to get to this point? So how are we doing? Does this all make sense?
I'm getting some chills actually when you speak.
Oh, well, that's a good thing. And we should get you a scarf.
Okay.
And some tea.
All right. If you're listening and you have a question, or maybe you are in a sticky situation and you want some help, you can call in at 888-627-6008. Do not worry about interrupting us. We will be notified and we will just create a pause to speak to you. And if not,
we're around every week.
Yeah. And we've got, I think, another 10 minutes to wrap this up. So what would be your big takeaways?
My big takeaways, I think I said them.
Yeah.
But that said, I was going to say, here's what's funny. Before we started doing this, and it, literally the way we kind of do a show is Morgana comes up with an idea of things that she wants to talk about, and she says, what do you, you know, here's the idea. So sometimes we just start talking as if nobody could tell we were winging it sometimes. But today I made a very definite list of 11 points. And do you know what, how many points we've covered so far?
One.
1A. We've covered one half of 1 point.
Uh-huh.
So that means we may have to cover this topic again if we want to get, and I think the others are sort of like, you know, further down the list and perhaps a little bit more, they're easier to kind of to get through. But the point is that if you are sitting at home and you love this person, you do, and you married them for good reasons, and you know that they have a good heart, and there's a handful of like issues, like the dishes that you just can't get beyond, you should probably be discussing it with me or Morgana at some level, because we're both coaches and we'll help you through that kind of stuff, because we want, honestly, like if everybody's leading a better, happier life, then the better, it's a better world, right? Because I mean, there's certain things we can't really control. But what's happening in our home life, most of the time, we actually have a strong say in it, right? In a country of 350 million people, we've got one vote. We may agree, we may disagree, it doesn't matter, but we get the one vote. In a house of two people, all of a sudden, you know, in terms of the relationship, now you've got 50%, right? As opposed to one in 350 million. And so there's a lot more strength of what it is that you can do to make your world better, to make your life better, to give yourself a little bit more freedom. And hopefully at the end of the day, is to develop a measure of intimacy that is going to make a much bigger, more important difference in your life.
And, you know, I'm known professionally far, far more about coaching around money, relationship with money. I started as a business coach 26 years ago, and I've been a life and personal coach and relationship coach for 20 years. And the thing that I want to tie into this is that when your home life is happy, it's holographic. Like everything is connected. And when your home life is happier, when you feel loved, your business gets better. It's better for your health. I mean, tons of studies on that. It's all connected. So definitely always take a look at what is within your sphere of influence. What is the baby step that you can take? There are, you know, the things that are too big for today. So don't tackle the things that are too big for today, or maybe that are just outside of your scope of being able to fix. I'm a big, big, big fan of do the easiest thing first, because then it gets done. And that builds confidence and that builds momentum. Start at home. Whether you are cleaning a pocket of where you live that is under your control, whether it is a shift of communication with your partner, if you can up just the affection level that you express to your partner as a science experiment and see what happens, I predict that that will have an impact far bigger than the energy that you expend on it.
Yeah.
That's my little magic tip for today.
Right. No, I think it's a great tip. And I think if you are just, you know, for those who might be sitting at home and thinking, oh my God, that sounds terrifying and really, really hard to do, I would start by writing down on a little scrap of paper what the thing behind the thing is really about. And maybe it's about the dishes. And I understand why most people want to go to the dishes, because it's just such an easy, concrete thing in our mind. But I would really kind of stress, you know, what's the deeper underlying thing? And at some point, most of the people that I've spoken to about dishes, and I've spoken to many, 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 many people about dishes, more often than not, it's about if they knew this, how this made me feel. Okay, great. So if this is how it makes you feel, what is it that you're feeling? Because that's the thing, right? That's the thing behind the thing. What are the dishes bringing up? Well, the dishes are bringing up that maybe I grew up in a house and I grew up with a family who didn't do the dishes, and there was, and they were fighting constantly, and there was animosity, and you know, maybe there was some much larger sort of family dynamic things that really sort of shaped and upset you, and those things manage to rear their ugly heads in our lives when we don't sort of tackle them. And so what better way than to tackle them with the person that you've chosen who cares a great deal for you? And if you frame it in the place of, I love you, I have this problem, I need your help, I think you're going to get much further. You're going to get much further in the process of A, developing intimacy, and also getting rid of the issue with the dishes. Because, go ahead.
Well, and there also may be a solution that didn't occur to you. Like if we go back to the premise that some people, like Exhibit A, Devin, is less sensitive to his environment than Exhibit B, which is Morgana. Like I'm never higher, high as a kite like I am after the house has been cleaned. And I don't think it makes any difference to Devin at all. So if we just understand that, and it could be Devin. Devin could be the really tidy one in the relationship, and I could be the... who are the odd couple? Felix and I could be the Oscar, and Devin could be the Felix.
Wow,
it really doesn't matter.
Dating ourselves.
Of course, midlife love.
By the way, I was actually on The Odd Couple in front of a live studio audience in like 1976. Separate
that
story.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So understanding that if I'm the Oscar and Devin is the Felix, he can be telling me this, and I have like no experience in my frame of reference to understand why the mess matters, because it doesn't matter to me. However, if Felix, aka Devin's feelings, matter to me, then I might come up with a solution, like let's get a dishwashing machine, or hire somebody, or have one of the kids do it, or God forbid, I will do it, you know, on certain days or something. But I'm just saying that your partner may come up with a solution that works for both of you that you never even thought of because you're asking for help.
Right. And I think, you know, probably the key word in all of this is the word to listen. Right. If we're listening to each other and giving ourselves space to kind of hear the other person, even if we disagree, right? Remember, I'm right. So why do I need to listen to you? You listen to this other person because you love and care for them, and you actually want them to be filled with happiness and satisfaction with the relationship, because you'll get laid more and life will be better. And there's, you know what I mean? There's more hand-holding and hugging and kissing and getting what it is that you want, even if that's space, right? Even if you want more space, somebody will get off your back about the dishes, because there'll be a much more deeper understanding of how you support each other within in your relationship. And I think that's like a whopper.
Well, it's empathy is more important than anything else. And if one person is an Oscar and one person is a Felix, they are both right for them. But if it's a relationship, it has to be right for the other person too. There has to be kind of like an ocean.
Right. And this goes, this all, by the way, this swing in the ocean, all that other stuff goes back to a theme that we've talked about many times on this show. It's this idea that there's going to be 5 to 7 things within a long-term relationship that are unresolved. That means maybe the person you want to do the dishes may never do the dishes, or what then? And then, of course, there's other things, you know, these larger points that we talk about. But that doesn't mean the relationship needs to fail because we disagree. It just means that we start looking, by listening to the other person, we start looking for sort of solutions to work through the problem. And the most important one is that we want to be heard and we want to be felt and we want to find peace and happiness. And so
we've been getting actually a bunch of inquiries about coaching. The place to learn about that is crazysexymidlifelove.com. I would say start by downloading Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know.
Because women are smarter than men.
And Devin wrote that for his daughter. Guys, you can read it too. And we will be having Devin's Mystical Solutions to Modern Love online some point. I'm working on it.
I was proud of that program. That
it's
was
a
great
good program. It
yeah.
is. And we will see you again next week, 5 p.m. May have a guest. And midlife love is better because 20-year-olds tend not to have conversations like this.
No, we don't. And it's much easier. And it's much, you know, as we get older, these kinds of conversations, while they're tricky, I think, they're far less tricky as we get older, because there's less, you know, on the line. We've kind of figured it out. So we get to own our stuff and we get to express it and be happy with each other.
So we will see you next week and enjoy crazy, sexy midlife love every day until then. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.